This is another damn podcast about digital asset management. I'm Henrik de Gior. I recently participated in the webinar called The State of DAM User Adoption Today, sponsored by the Insight Exchange Network and the DAM Guru Program. The panelists included Lisa Grimm, Jan Mattsson, Ralph Windsor, and myself, moderated by Frank DiCarlo. We hope you find the audio from this webinar insightful. Enjoy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's live panel discussion, The State of DAM User Adoption Today, sponsored by Insight Exchange Network, the DAM Guru Program, and both the New Jersey and London DAM meetups. My name is Frank DiCarlo. I'm the CEO of RPR Graphics. I'm very happy and honored to be moderating today's panel. Thank you all for being here. I know everyone is anxious to get started. We have a lot to cover, but before we do, I'd like to outline a few points and take a quick poll. Let's see. Try the how long have you been involved in DAM, if everybody wouldn't mind voting on that while we continue. Everyone, we've prepared a series of questions that the panel will offer their opinions on. During the discussion, the live audience, you, can also ask questions via the Q&A option on your computer or smart device. It would be helpful to vote on a similar question that you may already see posted instead of entering another. We will do our best to get to all of them. We're planning to save some time during this hour, probably the last 15, 20 minutes, for a live audience to ask their questions. You can do that by clicking on the raise hand option on your computer or smart device, and we'll bring you up on video to ask your question directly with the panel. As already demonstrated, we will ask a few poll questions during this panel discussion. Please participate, and we will display the results. In fact, let's display the results here. It's actually evenly dispersed. Oh, share results. It's actually evenly dispersed. Also, we can use the chat option to send out links or additional information to you, the audience, live directly. And lastly, we are recording this event. It will be sent via email to everyone who registered and will show up on various social media such as LinkedIn and YouTube. All right. As you already may be aware, we have an amazing panel with us today. Let's start by introducing them. Henrik de Gior, consultant, podcaster, and writer. Henrik, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Lisa Grimm, Director of Digital Asset Management at Novartis. Lisa, terrific to have you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Jan Mattsson, Digital Asset Manager and Blogger. Thanks, Ian.
It's my privilege.
And last but certainly not least, one of our co-sponsors to today's event, Ralph Windsor, organizer of London DAM and project director of Daydream. Ralph, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Frank. That's brilliant.
My pleasure. I'm going to put into the chat now a couple of links so that everybody can stay involved. But I thought before we start our actual discussion, maybe the panels can just talk a little bit about what is digital asset management for people that might be chiming in just on user adoption. Who would like to start?
So passionate about it, we don't go for it. But yeah, go for it.
So much to share.
I know. How do you boil it down?
I'll take a stab at it. Well, defining digital asset management is very much like trying to define what art is. But I think in a nutshell, I think there are many different definitions out there depending on where DAM is. But I think it's the practice of storing and managing and making accessible digital assets. And by digital assets, of course, we mean digital files, but that have had metadata appended to them. So that's my kind of very simple working definition.
And it's always about the metadata. I'm going to keep coming back to that.
I think there's just on the definition, is there's a difference between like you what you're actually doing as a practical user of digital assets, and then there's like a kind of actual definition of it. There is crossover between the two, but it's not always quite that clear cut.
Yeah.
And related to this topic, I think it starts with the people, so the users, which we're going to be talking about today, and of course the processes that they're going to be using and helping those users for those assets, that information, that metadata, to Lisa's point. And then finally, the technology that's going to help all of those things. Thank you.
Very good. Anybody else? Excellent. Let's get started. So, who are your users? Perhaps you want to explain a little bit with your answers what the context is to that question, but pertaining to user adoption, who are your users?
I'll jump in first. I think one of the things I've learned in about 20 years in this field and in sort of ancillary fields is that the people who are going to be the main users of your DAM system may or may not be the people you thought were going to be the users as you went through your sort of initial studies, or if you come on board sort of mid or late into the process. You may discover that you've had things set up for whether that's internal or external people who you thought were going to be the chief users, and it turns out it's a completely different set of people. And I think especially since so much of DAM is working with marketing or working in that sort of whole creative ops stack, although it's not the only place, we can get into that a little bit more later, is that a lot of times your users may be external. They may be creative agencies, and if you haven't figured out really basic things like how to get them through your firewall into the system, that can be a problem. But when you're just thinking of it from the adoption perspective, are there people you need to find in-house who work with those people? Do you really need to have someone who's a liaison to those external people? And then, and I know some others are going to get into this too, really thinking about how do you differentiate between those kind of users? What are their different roles in the system? Even as basic as, are there people who have read-only access? Are there people who are uploading things? Do you have librarians, and I hope you do, who are going in and making sure that as your assets are uploaded, they have the correct metadata applied? But that's something that not everyone needs to see behind the curtain on. So really thinking about how you're creating that user experience and how you're helping people get what they need without having to kind of jump through many hoops to not have things they don't need. That's, I think, where you really want to be very thoughtful in creating that user experience, making sure you know who those users are and what their needs are, and that they're going to be different. And you really have to think about those different experiences really carefully before you just roll out something brand new and hope that it's what people love, because that takes some time.
Very good.
Just to add to that, I think, yeah, all of Lisa's points are really good. I'd also say you have to kind of think about like your whole digital asset supply chain, which is kind of a hot topic coming up a lot in our consulting practice. So it's kind of everybody, who's not necessarily those who are actually hands-on using your DAM, downloading, uploading assets, but people who might be supplying digital materials that go to it, and also people who might be using the digital assets that come out the other end downstream. So they would need to be included in your user constituency as well. And they obviously factor from an adoption perspective.
Yeah, and also just to go back to what Henrik had said about the three aspects of digital asset management: people, technology, and processes. I think it's important to kind of understand that the users will, though at the beginning of a DAM initiative, you may scope out who your users are, but I need you need to keep in mind kind of the process and where those digital assets are coming from. And perhaps those digital assets will be created in one department and then be used by another department. But you kind of need to keep your eye on just who's producing those items, who's ingesting, who's going to be using them and reusing them, and then adding the metadata. So you do need to keep in mind, what the types of users you'll be working with, and also that those users, as going back to what Lisa was saying, the users don't stay the same. They're going to be changing. As us librarians know, libraries, including digital asset management systems, are organic and they continue to change. So your user base and the users will change as well. There'll be new groups that you need to onboard. So you need to be prepared for that. And one aspect that I think that we also need to be considering in today's age is that users may not necessarily be human. They might be automations. They might be other systems. So you do need to keep in mind that you might have some other systems that need to be pulling from your digital asset management system. So ensuring that there's an API and a way that calls can be made to grab metadata assets and that sort of thing as well. It's important.
Yeah, all great points. Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that is to consider the fact that the users that input your assets may not be the ones that use your assets. And there may be a very large gap between them. So they might be agencies or parties that are just creators, and those creators may not be the ultimate users of those assets themselves. We're typically talking about rich media assets, so audio, video, text, graphics, photos. And there may be different groups creating them internally or externally, as some of us mentioned. And the metadata may be applied by another group, internally or externally as well, or an AI, and at least as a first pass. And so it's also what we know what the job market looks like and how quickly people change jobs. So there's going to be change of who is actually touching those assets and who is using them, who's applying metadata, and who's ultimately using the system. And not just registered users, but actually users who are actually concurrently using the system.
Yeah, and being able to group those users into different personas is certainly going to be easier from an administrative perspective. But again, making sure you know what those personas are, that's something that it's always going to need refinement. You need to have some sort of governance cadence for that, just like you would for any other aspect of the system. So that's important too.
Excellent.
One other point I've made with this is when it comes, starting with the user adoption, I've tended to find a lot of clients to deal with will think about user adoption being for basic users, and not enough kind of attention given to certainly administrators and upload users, people's digital assets. So when people talk about users, they tend to think of people who will download a logo 3 times a year rather than everybody else who actually provides the material that makes them useful in the first place.
Very good. Thank you for that. Something else you wanted to add?
I just wanted to add one item, just turning it back to user adoption, is considering those folks who are adding metadata, they aren't necessarily the people who are going to be downloading and using the assets or maybe even benefiting from that metadata. And I think that is a challenge, is to really kind of encourage those people to enter that metadata in consistently and accurately if they don't see the benefits of that directly. So I think one of the ways that I've set out to really convince them or encourage them to do that is to show them and discuss how their work is going to be benefiting the company and other people for perhaps years to come.
That's good context. And to piggyback on that, one last point I would like to make is the fact that those importers of metadata, they're feeding different metadata sets to different users and different user groups. So scientists may look for different information than engineers, and engineers may look for different information than salespeople and marketeers and things like that. So they all have different personas, as Lisa mentioned, and different uses for that search via metadata for that specific asset in question that they're looking for. Thanks.
Very good. I'll ask the next question. At the same time, I'll put up another poll. Why is user interface or user experience so important to user adoption?
I'll just come in here. I think there's a difference between user interface, user experience. I'm not sure exactly on the definitions of UI versus UX, but I think it's kind of like user experience is what encourages people to actually use the DAM so it looks attractive and straightforward to use and that kind of thing. User interface, I'm thinking about it more as a kind of functional human-computer interface. And what I tended to find is there's a lot of confusion, especially among the vendors, about which is which. You'll find some systems that are kind of we've got amazing user experience, but then the actual information architecture isn't particularly brilliant. And I've certainly run into that as a problem. So I think it's important, but you have to differentiate between, as I said, the user interface as this kind of human-computer interaction, something being straightforward to use versus something that's attractive and compelling to use.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think we've all seen those situations where both of those situations kind of to their extremes, where either you have something that looks pretty but just isn't getting people what they need, it doesn't let you change your metadata profiles, different things like that, or on the other side of the fence, you have something that, you know, can just is so hard to click through that no one wants to use it. And so that can really be a problem when it comes to user adoption too. It may do all the things under the hood, but if only a tiny percentage of your super users can use it easily, then you're going to be stuck there. And I think it's really important too, when you're thinking about the interface and that experience, to really dig into what kind of experience are your users, or you know, the people you've identified as your users, coming from right now. I think especially when you're rolling out a big global DAM initiative, you have to think about some of your people have no system at all that they're working with, so anything is kind of a net improvement, whereas others may have something that they love that they are just absolutely invested in. And if you're making them change too, you're going to run into all these different people along different adoption curves. And so much of that is down to the user experience and what they're used to using, again, whether that's nothing or whether that's something great. So having to kind of sort of tune your offering to those different levels, those different experiences, is really going to make a difference as you're trying to get people to buy in. And I know we're going to talk a little more later about sort of how you can have change champions and people like that really kind of help drive that. But really digging in and knowing what people have right now and what that experience is can help you craft that more useful experience, even if you can't get absolutely everything you want with all the bells and whistles in your first iteration or, you know, first or second release. You really want to make sure that you're at least not making people do something that is so counter to their existing processes or, you know, their existing expectations that they're just going to sort of look at it and walk away. So I think, again, it comes back down to, you know, how do people interact with it and what does it look like to them and what's the lift from where they are now? So experience is a huge part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was going to just go back to something that Ralph had said earlier about human computer, human machine interaction. It really is where the rubber meets the road. I think that, an aspect of UI or UX is just access. I think folks, when they're looking at an interface, they should be able to pick up very easily how it's used, how it should behave. I think there should be little to no training needed, though some of the under the hood or more kind of advanced capabilities or tools may need a bit of training. But I think it really comes down to enabling the people to access the material in all sorts of various aspects or issues come up. You know, you need to consider, what are people's past experiences? What are their psychology? Are they going to be attracted by the experience? Will they feel comfortable with the experience? Are the colors right for people who might be colorblind? All of those things, make up that user experience and will enable folks to access the material they need. I think one aspect that I just wanted to touch on very quickly is latency. I think that many of you may or may not know what I mean by that, but just how slow or how fast the system is. But I think one aspect that may be out of our hands and out of our control is just how slow a system may respond, because it may depend on the IT department or just the IT or internet infrastructure. Many of us are moving very large files up and down into the system. And we need to consider, what the speeds are, what people are expecting. So giving some consideration about that is important as well, and try to ease that wait period. Otherwise, people might go and find another system to move their large files around.
Yeah, I think a quick follow-up there too is, how are they doing that? If you have people who are out in a sales force who just need to download something, who only ever access everything via their phone or via a tablet, they're not going to go and, you know, go find a desktop to go and do this, or a laptop even, perhaps, if they don't carry that with them. And so I think, again, you can look at your vendor capability or what you might be building on top of that in terms of a dashboard. But if you're telling people they have to use things a certain way or via only certain interfaces, again, they're just not going to use it. It's not going to be useful to them. So really taking those use cases into account is important too. How those different user groups interact with your system, even if it's just to receive or like to upload large files, you know, get them where they are. It can't just be a matter of, you know, making them change their process to suit you.
Yeah, I think it's a matter of accessibility, whether you are using accessible tools. And obviously, everything should be accessible when it comes to the usability as far as your role, your use of that, whether you're uploading, downloading, to everyone's point earlier. Of course, it's the findability. So you shouldn't have an enormous manual to learn how to find something in your system, whether you're using keywords or some other kind of search. That's very clear. So clarity is really important, right, in that UX and the UI, so that it's clear how you use it and where to click on to find or download or upload something and what's necessary or what's required to do so. And then, of course, there's the findability, that the usability is pretty important, and of course the accessibility. I also wanted to share that the NYC DAM had a whole panel discussion about this, so I'm going to share that in the comments as far as the video that was shared with us, where we had some UX experts talking about it as far as UI and UX and defining the differences between them. Thanks.
I just got one other point on scalability as well. This is another issue that I see all the time. By scalability, I don't mean necessarily like technology and that sort of things, you know, in terms of storage space, but DAMs behave quite differently when they've got 10,000 assets as opposed to, say, a million assets. You get into all these things like drop-down menus having 600 entries, like being really wide where people only expected them to be sort of, say, 20 to 30 characters. So I think in terms of the UI, you have to think about how it will scale and that kind of stuff. And that really needs to happen quite early on. But it's the sort of thing you've also got to keep managing and monitoring as you go through using your DAM. And I found that as a factor with adoption. If it becomes ugly over time, then, adoption will fall off.
I was just going to make a quick comment about, you know, where we were 15, 20 years ago and where we are now and what people's expectations are at to level set. I think, you know, we all are familiar with printing papers up, printing documents and putting them into our drawer and being able to reach over and finding them very quickly. Well, we're shifting people to interface to those assets. So we've in a sense made it more complicated. And I think that we need to think of ways to offset that process. And I think one of the ways is to really keep at the forefront of our minds when we're working with our users is how do we save them time? And I think that's a very important thing to keep in mind. And there's a lot of ways that you can do that. One of them is workflow automation. And AI, as Henrik had mentioned previous. But if we can find ways to make that process easier, sometimes mapping at the beginning and before a system may be deployed or adopted, you know, mapping out that process into steps. So you might have 7 or 8 steps that are being done, you know, on a file share, but through a digital asset management system, you might be able to shorten that to 3 steps. And over thousands of assets, that's going to be saving people a lot of time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you make an important point, too, around how things have changed over, especially the past sort of 15 years or so, is we have user expectation now as part of that user experience, too, because more and more frequently, you are in a situation now where your company or, you know, your department, whichever, may be moving on to their 3rd or 4th DAM. They've already had experience working with one. That's not universal still by any means, but more and more people are used to this kind of system. and are really looking for some of those improvements as they're adopting something new. And if they're not seeing those, they're going to wonder where they are. And I think, you know, you have much more familiarity, again, not universally, but much more than you had even, say, 5 years ago. So if you're moving people from one system to another, they need to be, you know, really getting something in terms of that time savings, those efficiencies. Otherwise, they don't know why you're on this journey. So those are important to highlight.
Very good. Somebody's asking, how does tablet or mobile interfaces factor into use cases and user adoption? Any comments on that?
It's an interesting area, because at one time I used to hold the view that the mobile stuff was kind of a bit of a sideshow, really, and damn, because most of the users tended to be at a desktop. Most of the users are kind of like looking for assets to use in a project. And usually you were sat in front of a PC with a large screen, all the rest of it. But you are getting more people carrying out at least basic operations, certainly things like reviewing assets for a workflow and stuff like that. So it is coming in. I'm gradually having to eat my words, unfortunately, with that one.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think it's something, too, where some vendors have picked that up much more quickly than others. And I think, you know, we won't name any names here, but I think we can all point to cases where things just have not been possible out of the box, and how you can sort of work around those things where, again, that user expectation is there now. How do you work with that? And again, trying to identify which subgroups of your users are going to need that workflow. And, you know, maybe it's everyone. It absolutely can be. But I think it's becoming more and more important where, you know, it's sort of less about the form factor and more, can you be everywhere? So.
Right. And sometimes the users need to use it mobily when they're out in the field, and they don't want to put a laptop. So they want to use either their phone or a phablet or tablet, for that matter, to display an asset to certain clients or a potential client, for that matter, to make that sale or to continue those sales, or even adminning a system when you're out in the field and you're not in front of your computer.
That's right. Yeah, questions that anybody has out there in the live audience, hit the Q&A. A lot easier to enter them there than in chat. We can keep track of them. Also, you can vote on the questions as far as if you want them answered by the panel. Somebody's asking, is there anything on voice yet having to do with searching through DAMs? Any Siri or Alexa?
That's a good question. I have definitely had people ask. I've had people want to know where it is, and I've had vendors say, sure, we can do that. But then when you dig into it, it's like, oh, it's on the roadmap. So, you know, for maybe 3 years out. But you know, again, those capabilities are there. People want what is easy. They expect it. I think we all hear this. I want it to be like Google. And, you know, you get that all the time, and trying to really remove some of those barriers to entry, if you like. So I think we're going to start seeing it. We certainly see things from a sort of speech to text end. You see a lot of the ability, most vendors, I think, at this point have the ability to do, you know, sort of auto transcripts on the fly. They're not always pretty, but they can do it now. I think almost anything that you can get out of your AWS toolbox is in somebody's system somewhere, or on the Azure side. But all of those automation tools are there, and it's a question of, you know, can you turn them on? Do you have a use case that can make it worthwhile to really invest and dig further into it?
Well answered. Good.
I was just going to add that I think the technology is there. I think what's missing is the consensus that we need to have to push for the vendors to develop in a certain direction. So I think that's why it's important to have these webinars, but also the conferences, where we can kind of have a consensus over what we really need and what would bring value to our work. But I think voice recognition is fantastic. One aspect I would love is an ability there in the DAM would be to do a reverse image search. Right now we're so dependent on text, some color that can be indexed as well, but being able to search using a picture that may have been grabbed off of a website to check to see, you know, perhaps the rights are expired or what rights it has, that would be very helpful.
Okay. Let's move on to another question, and put out another poll as well. So what techniques have been successful in the adoption of DAM? And what kind of challenges have been incurred along the way to come up with a solution?
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, it's really, I think, with user adoption, if you run a business, it's, user adoption is a bit like a kind of the equivalent of a sales sort of activity, and that's one of the reasons it's really difficult to do, because it's quite unpredictable. So I think you almost, you have to approach it like it's like a sales marketing exercise. I mean, you're not asking people to hand over money. You are asking them to hand over their time and their attention. What I've found is that when people approach it from that perspective, they tend to come up with better ideas than something that's kind of quite linear. Oh, we'll do a video, we'll do a kind of documentation, trot that out, and hopefully people will take it on. So that's my kind of sort of one of the general principles, I would say. But I'll give way to Lisa. As I'm sure she has something more insightful to say than I do.
No, I think those are really good points. And I think so much of it too is trying to, I mean, it's like anything, you need change management. You need to be really deliberate in what that change management looks like and identifying those different user groups and approaching them however they need to be approached. So whether that's being really I'll put sort of corporate in air quotes, and sort of drawing up a RACI chart and figuring out how often you need to reach these different stakeholders in different ways, or really figuring out, is this something that needs training? Do we need to make a video? If you're rolling this out in a specific country, does everything have to be done in the local language? You know, not even thinking of it from a compliance perspective, which is a whole other thing, but really thinking about, you know, how are you telling users that this is happening? How do you bring them along on this journey? Again, what are they going from to? So if you can really map out those different things, I think that can make a big difference. And again, also thinking about, are there some users who are kind of going to be forced into this, whether they want to or not? If you're an agency uploading something, that may be in your contract that you have to use the system and you don't get out of it, or you don't get paid. But for your internal users, or again, that's, you know, the internal, external is not the only way to think about it. But for these different users, how are they being told this is happening? How are they being kind of encouraged to do the right thing, if you like? How are you driving the behaviors you want to see? So whether, some organizations really kind of gamify adoption, saying, oh, so-and-so did all of these things in the system, they get a badge, or whatever that is. There's a lot of different approaches that are going to work differently in different organizations. But I think it's all about, do you have other people who can help support this? Like if you have change champions or other people you can embed in different parts of the org, that makes it easier to sort of, you know, see people doing what you want. But it has to be really deliberate. You don't always have the resources to do a whole kind of change management thing. But at the same time, if you don't do it, it's not going to happen. So it's how much time do you have to carve that out?
Yeah, just to pick up on that, I think the message that I would like to get to convey is that it really does take a team of people. In fact, the whole organization needs to be behind the mm-hmm. initiative. Though there might be one person responsible for a system, or governance, I think it's very important to understand that to make DAM work within an organization, it really does need participation. And I think one of the ways that I've thought of DAM is decentralized, not its assets, but the people who were involved in keeping it up and running. Finding those change champions. But I like to think of folks as different types of users, and one of them is the power users. The way that I've I'd like to see, or the way in which they could really come and help or to be very helpful is to take some of the responsibilities of setting people, users up, perhaps, or creating folder structures, or even creating users. Having other people in other departments, those power users do that, means that I am less of a bottleneck. And I'd like to see that. I don't want to be the person that people always have to go to get set up. And so having other people do that serves to decentralize the process, and I think to really kind of move the system forward. And again, it helps with allow people to have access to the digital content they need to do their work.
Also, I think it matters where you are on the implementation or the operation of the system. So even before you get a system, you have to have people who are going to be champions to it, realistically speaking. So granted, most of the people on this panel are subject matter experts in DAM, and we've been administrators to systems XYZ, DAM systems at different companies, et cetera, or helping in the process as consultants. But the thing is, ultimately, there has to be a librarian that's going to be the ultimate champion to it, right? Somebody who's heading it up and the effort. It's not a standalone system that just operates by itself. IT isn't going to care beyond it being operational as far as the lights and bandwidth it needs and the power that it needs or the servers that it might need. But once it's operational, IT might be the implementers internally speaking, and then there might be an implementer outside, an outside party, and then you have the solution provider. But you have also, those are not going to be your champions for the beyond the selling of the system and the implementation of the system. Beyond the actual usage of the system, that's all internal for the most part. And it starts from the top, right? For whether it's your CEO or CMO or CIO, whoever owns that initiative, right? As far as the budget is concerned, even though they will never touch the system themselves, right? They approve the system and they're probably the sponsor, right? So there's the sponsor. Then you have the stakeholders and the principals of the system, who may be your art directors or whomever, right? Or someone who's going to be overseeing the users, the potentially the largest group of users, whether that's marketing or some other group for that matter. And then the actual users themselves may be the marketeers or the people who are going to be downloading the most. And then who's going to be supplying it, whether it's agencies, like ad agencies, for example, or if it's an internal party, or is it photo agencies or photographers or videographers or freelancers, for that matter, who are uploading into the system. And then there's a queue and someone who's validating and approving it and saying, yes, this is how it's supposed to go into the system. And whatever that workflow is going to look like, right? So there's many, many different steps. One of the things that I did as an administrator when I was one is I created DAM awards. And if you can find more of information about it on another damblog.com and just type in DAM awards. But I literally gave awards to people who would be the biggest users of the system on a regular basis in different roles, whether they were uploaders or downloaders, and award them. And whether they were subject matter experts in their field or subject matter experts in something else across departments, so that they would get awarded for something that they would have to do within the system. And no one else got awards for doing anything in the company. Typically, you don't get recognized aside from your bonus or your pay raise for the sake of argument in most businesses. But giving that small token, basically it was a certificate saying you're the month's biggest award winner, a DAM user. And that was a small token that people would even include in their signature line saying, I won a DAM award this month. And that even promoted that across the organization who they emailed, interestingly enough. And that was one technique that I used beyond, of course, the clarification. So there was some tips that were given on a regular basis. There would be an active engagement between the subject matter experts, such as the DAM librarian, who would actively update fact pages, frequently asked questions, and also email them with the information like, how do I upload? I haven't uploaded in a month. Or how do I download? It's not clear enough to me. And that's obviously tips that you need to clarify the system, right? That the download button is not clear enough, or the upload process is not clear enough, or clarify it in instructions if necessary. So all those are techniques that you can use to improve user adoption. Because keep in mind, when we say user adoption, it's not the DAM subject matter expert adopting users. It's literally the users adopting the DAM. And that's the harder part that we have to tackle. Because that's literally what user adoption is. Thanks.
Very good. Nothing like a little acknowledgement. Go ahead.
Just got one other point there. There's a paper. I'll see if I can post this into the chat. And this is from last year's or this year's IEA conference. This is by Carol Thomas Knipes, who a lot of you will know, who's involved with DAM Guru. There's a paper called Seeing the Forest, Keys to DAM Sustainability. I'll see if I can paste it in now. Hopefully that's come up. This is really brilliant. It's unfortunately, it's only the deck. You haven't got Carol's great delivery, certainly better than my delivery. I definitely recommend checking that out. There's loads of useful tips if you're into adoption, user adoption, and DAMs, in addition to everything that Henrik, Jan, and Lisa have mentioned.
Along those lines, is there anything else that anybody wants to mention in regard to templates or some complete rollout plans that might be out there, some communications or trainings, anything that you're aware of that some of us could follow?
I think I don't have anything that's super DAM specific, but some things like a blank RACI chart, for example, just for those who haven't used them, RACI. I think just mapping out who those stakeholders are, some stakeholder mapping templates, things like that are out there. So you can take these very basic sort of generic tools and apply them to just to start figuring out who are my different user groups? Do I need to approach them in different ways? How often? Things like that. So I think some of those really basic kind of change management tools exist out there, and they can be a starting point.
Very good. So we're going to open this up. Something else, John?
Yeah, I was going to paste a couple URLs to some usability or design websites to discuss UI and UX that people might find helpful. They're a little bit dated, but I think a lot of what's mentioned on the two websites is still relevant today.
Very good.
One other thing I'll add is I spent about a year working on user adoption and diving into the topic beyond just DAM, because I think other topics might be interested in the topic as well. So I actually created useradoptionpodcast.com, and you can find more information there. Thanks.
So let's open this up to some question and answers. I noticed people are putting in some Q&As, which is great. If you'd like to interact with the panel directly, you can raise your hand by just hitting the participants icon. And there's a function there where you can raise your hand and we can bring in live so that you can voice your questions directly. While maybe some people are wanting to do that, someone's asking about the just addressing the end user expectation of successful searches versus both taxonomy, facet structure, as well as tagging effectiveness. So many assets, so little metadata, so often. Anybody want to comment on that a bit?
Well, I can say that some DEM systems actually capture whether searches are successful or not, and they will actually return the terms being entered, which is very helpful, especially if you're designing or putting together a controlled vocabulary or a taxonomy. I think that if search isn't working, you will hear about it. As an EDAM librarian or a subject matter expert, people will be very communicative about that. So I think, you know, taking meetings, checking up on people. The one thing I wanted to mention just in relation to that is that DAM, I think, for larger companies, is thought of as a project. So let's get the money, set the system up, great, it's done, people will use it. I think we really do need to think of it as a program, an ongoing program. And with that, I think with groups, you need, you know, what I would recommend and what I do is have standing meetings every couple of weeks, you know, time for a sprint maybe, where you can just check in, half hour, ask them how things are going. People will be much more open to telling you what their frustrations are or their successes are, you know, live as opposed to through email. I think it's easy for people to pass, you know, ignore an email that might come into their inbox, even if it's a survey. So checking with people, I think works really well.
Yeah. And I think some of that too goes into the governance model that you're building and that you're going to keep running, especially if we're thinking about metadata. And it's so hard to create KPIs around metadata where you have things like, yes, you can see where people abandoned searches or what wasn't working, but making sure that you have essentially a metadata and taxonomy governance steering committee with stakeholders from across the business, people who are users, people who are, you know, from different, coming into it from different parts of the system. Maybe you have some some kind of master data management thing in place. And if you can get all of those people together meeting quarterly or however frequently that needs to be, you want to make sure that you can keep improving that model and keep making it better and better and, you know, feed those things back into your DAM. And again, going back to kind of user interface, that's not always as easy as it should be. So that's something to work with your vendor about. Sometimes it's great, but I think too, making sure that you can make those changes and that you can be really agile about making those changes is going to just help make it, you know, continuously getting easier and easier for your users to find things. And but you really have to have that governance piece in place and make sure that you're not just kind of up and running. Again, to your point that we did the thing. No, it's ongoing and you need to keep everyone engaged. And, you know, you have this smaller select group you're going to meet with more frequently, but those things have to happen or else you stagnate and then you start to see that sort of drop away.
Good. A couple of people are asking this type of question, which is, have you had a system rollout that had technical issues where you had to address negative attitudes, sometimes with creatives or others, if that's not working perfectly? How do you get over that hurdle?
It's one of those, is the Pope Catholic questions.
We've all been there, yeah.
Yes, we have.
I think every DAM system has its challenges when it's first rolled out.
Henrik, every DAM system.
Yeah, every DAM system, literally. However you want to spell it, right? and that's part of the challenges, right, that you have to face. And it's really a matter of testing it properly and testing it against why you originally got it, not just to get a system, but what problem is it solving or problems and who are the first guinea pigs who are going to solve this or get their problem solved, right? Who want to get it solved as close to it as possible. And what is that going to look like? Because you have to know what that finished result is going to look like, right? In order to design that system that way. You can't just say, well, I need a DAM. It's like, okay, you have 260 choices. Go ahead, pick one. Now that doesn't work that way. And DAM vendors would say that, oh, our mine's perfect. You know, that's kind of irrelevant. It's really what problem are you solving and who are you solving it for? Literally your users, right? And who are your users? You have to identify and personify your users as far as like what are they uploading? What file formats are they do you need to support? All that fun stuff. How big are your files, etc. So where is your system going to be used? Who are good people going to be downloading from? How many people are going to be downloading at the same time? Things like that. And so all those are challenges that you're going to come up. And the challenges are normal, right? That's why it takes typically months for a rollout. And you know, people don't want to hear that, especially if you're a project manager or a sponsor. But it's true. People have to eat it and understand and plan for it and actually plan for user adoption, which most people don't. In the project itself. And then after the project of implementing a system, to Jan's point, there is the operation of the system, which is technically, if you think about it, not a marathon, but permanent. When are you going to stop creating assets? Well, if you're a relevant organization, you're never going to stop creating assets, right? No matter what business you're in. So you're always going to create media to advertise your products or services, right? Or someone will. And you're always going to continue doing that so that you get rid of your bell bottoms equivalent, right, from your organization and advertise the new product or service or the new iteration of it. So you're always going to need a digital asset management to hold your rich media so that it feeds that enterprise content management hub, whatever that happens to look like. So it feeds your website, it feeds your banner ads, it feeds the print if you use that, or your TV ads or your radio spots or whatever. And so it looks like a huge ecosystem that has to be fed on a regular basis. So yes, it's going to fail on occasion, and it's not going to be perfect. On a regular basis. This is why we have subject matter experts in this. This is why you should have a DAM librarian. This is why you should have technical experts working on the system. And this is why you need user adoption to be supported within your own organization if you want a DAM.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll follow up on that a little bit as well. That's all. That's brilliant. That's all sort of what I was going to say. But I'd add on top of that too, you know, make sure that your users understand and that you know, that you're hearing them, that you hear the things that they're seeing as pain points. Share your roadmap with them to whatever extent. You don't want to have them come back to you and say, hey, you promised we'd have this next quarter. Where is it? But really try to say, yes, we know, we hear you. We're prioritizing these features. We're working with our vendor to do X, Y, Z. Try to do that at least quarterly. Have some kind of regular change in comms that goes out to everyone, not just, you know, to sort of your senior sponsors who obviously want to know, you know, they want some really specific numbers. They They want to see that their investment is paying off in some way. But you really need to go back to those users and say, you know, here is version, you know, this is a beta, or this is version one. We know that these things are going to be gaps. We're working to fix those gaps and really make clear that their input is needed as you're thinking about what's in your roadmap, what's in your next quarter, what's, you know, what's happening next year. Show them where they are on that journey and say, you know, we know this is getting you this far along the line. Here's where we plan to be next year. Here's where we plan to be 2 years out. And they'll understand that, you know, you're not always going to hit all of those things, whether it's, you know, vendor or what, you know, internal resource constraints, but they want to know that they've been heard. So I think that's the important thing, is making sure that, you know, people's concerns are validated and that they can really impact what's going to be coming up next. They want to be a part of that planning. They don't just want to have something thrown over the fence to them.
And just to add to that, thank you. I couldn't have said it better myself. But one of the things I think in, along those lines is, you know, empathy. I think that it's important, you know, if there's someone is complaining about the system, not to dismiss what they're saying, but to really listen and to react. But also, I think what's important when looking at a system and how it needs to function, besides really capturing those user or those business requirements, we really need to develop user stories. And I think that those is an important kind of tool in our arsenal as subject matter experts to really talk about what the system needs to be doing. In presenting those user stories to the stakeholders, to the folks that will be using it and benefiting from it, so they can respond and explain, you know, how those are correct or not correct. And then you can kind of break those user stories down and say, okay, well, we're going to roll out this percentage of the user stories, and we're going to test to those user stories. And based on those, you can come up with testing scripts. And I think that having a test script is very important, because there is bound to be something that is missed if you don't have a testing script. So you can be very consistent with a script. However, I think it's also important to have user acceptance testing. And that's where you invite users, select number of users to go into the system and use the system. You may have a script for that. I actually don't like having a script, because users are going to use the system in the way that they think they should use it. And they're bound to find things that don't work and that are broken. And those are the things we need to push back to the vendor. One other thing I wanted to say about vendors, I love vendors. I think they've got a really tough job, but vendors who don't test as thoroughly as I do frustrate me. I think that I don't want to be their better beta testers. They should be testing on every browser, every platform, every device. And so when I go through testing and or the team that I belong to goes through testing, we find things. We push it right back to them. And I think there's something to be said about, you know, working with a production or project manager and ensuring you do have that enough time to test, because you're bound to find things that need to be fixed, and you need enough time to go back and forth. Because with every fix, you've got to do another round of testing, because something that may be fixed may break something else.
One thing to piggyback on what Jan said, that there's user requirements where users may have those. And then there's user expectations. And you can't necessarily meet all of those. And sometimes you have to say no, or sometimes we have to say it'll be done in the future. And here's that roadmap of what when we might have the budget to do, you know, make it look like Google. Google doesn't have a dam yet. So one day we'll have voice search. One day we'll have things like that. We can't meet all expectations. We can try on the requirements if there is the budget and time and willingness to do those. Aside from expectations, you need to make sure that you can do it, right? And with the team that you have and the resources that you have. Thanks.
How do you know when you've achieved critical mass when it comes to user adoption? What are some metrics maybe that you're looking at to measure that?
So I guess it depends on how big your organization is. And keep in mind, DAM is not for the world. It's for a very set number of users. You may have 10,000 users within your organization, and you may have 10,000 read-only seats for the sake of argument. But it also matters of how many people are actually logging in rather than just having being registered as a user. So critical mass doesn't necessarily mean they're going to use it every single day. They might use it 2 times a year for the sake of argument, as far as downloading something when they need. Most people do not live in a DAM system. Even DAM librarians do not live in the DAM system all day long. They have meetings. And they, you know, no one really wants to live in a DAM system. And I've seen portals where it's a visualization inside of it. So it's like a download store sometimes, where it's a much simpler interface. And some DAM vendors offer that for the sake of argument. But it's really a matter of finding out who are you're going to be your core users, your power users. So people are going to be uploading, and they're going to be in the DAM system quite often if you're uploading on a regular basis. I've been in institutions where they're uploading on a daily or weekly basis, thousands of unique assets. And then there's institutions where they upload seasonally, right? So if it's a seasonal thing or an annual thing, right, they're uploading once or every season or year or every month, or whatever that looks like. And then they're downloading a whole pile during the life cycle of those assets. And then they tapers off. So it depends. It really depends. So I'm a consultant. I can say it depends.
I think just on the critical mass side of things, I mean, this is hard to quantify. But I would say it's these days with DAM, it's less about the actual DAM system. And it's more about how integrated it is into the rest of the enterprise and beyond the digital asset supply chain. So you're really looking for the DAM to touch as many parts of the business as possible. I think that's your main objective, rather than necessarily, oh, we've got X number of users, therefore it's kind of job done, so to speak. You always need to be advocating, if you're a digital asset manager, you always need to be advocating for why the DAM is relevant. And I think that's probably the measure to go for.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. Again, like it depends, but also how are you measuring success in your organization? It's going to be different everywhere. And the KPIs you develop may not even show some of that success. You may need to have proxies for those things. It can be hard to show efficiency, even though you know someone has saved, 100 hours doing X or Y. It can be hard to show that in just kind of the metrics you get. So thinking about how you can tell that story too is just as important as making sure you are measuring the right things.
Okay. I just one last thing I wanted to say is that I think just to put a bug in everybody's ear about measuring before you roll a DAM out, if that's where you are in the initiative, is capturing the metrics before it's rolled out and then recapturing again to see what the difference is. You know, have people's time on task been reduced, for example? It's much harder to measure that after the DAM system has been put into place. So that's an important aspect as well.
How about your experience with having application support teams separate from traditional IT, basically people or a team that support this adoption process? I think it generally would increase the odds of a successful adaptation, but have you had some experience with having a team of people supporting you?
I have, and I've actually had it where it's worked well and where it hasn't. So again, I think it's like any of those other relationships. How are you defining success, and what do you expect to get out of that? If they're just sort of going out and handing out talking points, it's not always going to be useful. But if you can have them really showing, what's the lift, how are you saving time, then you have a good partnership. But I think it's being really aligned to those business goals that's going to drive that over the line.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've seen a very large consulting company, nothing to do with me, where they've had like a user adoption stroke change management expert come in, and basically, yeah, we've had a bunch of PDFs that they wrote 10 years ago or something. So it depends. It doesn't depend on necessarily on that you've got this separate team. It's kind of what they do. It's the process they've got to deliver all this. And whether or not they're any good, basically.
How about remote engagement challenges for adoption?
Can you speak on that a bit? Maybe having to do with the size of ads, layman's expectations on performance. Have you had any experience with overseas or different user adoption cases where you're juggling people from afar?
I have, yeah. I had several clients where they were they had people in China, and the challenge is with China is not everything works there. So Azure and AWS work because they can be monitored, and they will be allowing the Great Firewall to do what it thing what it does, and so there's that challenge, right, where it's constricted by the government, and then there's also challenges where you have limited bandwidth at your office. Where I've had clients where it's like, oh, well, we download everything at home or via our phone because the office has the equivalent of dial-up. So, by the way, we have to download multiple megs or gigs of files. So, like, why? And then they were wondering why they had duplicates because they had 10 designers. And all the designers had their own archive as separate from a dam. So you can see the challenges there where it's a constraint, right? Where if you don't have the proper tools, meaning the access to proper bandwidth, why are you expecting a tool that you need to download a gigabyte file or a megabyte file down with a terrible internet coverage is capable? So forgetting the interface, if the let's just say the SaaS tool, the software as a service, based in the cloud somewhere, it doesn't have the umph locally to deliver. You're going to see the scrolling page that we have no patience for anymore. The alleged attention span is 7.5 seconds, maybe less, and for something to connect is like 1.5 or less, right? And what if it's slower than that? Well, then I ain't using it, right? That's the usual answer.
That's right. Anybody else? Because we're running out of time. It goes so quick. I think it's a good time to cut this off. Panelists, thank you. You're all amazing individuals. Very insightful.
Terrific. Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for saying up, Frank.
Our pleasure. I want to thank everybody that participated live and all your questions. There are many questions that we didn't get to. What I'm going to do is ask the panelists. Maybe I'll send the questions to you and you can do some few answers. And maybe within a few days, we'll get this link out on YouTube and social medias. And via email, we'll answer some of the questions that weren't addressed today. Everybody's okay with that? Terrific. Again, thank you all. We look forward to the next time and have a terrific day. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, all.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
If you enjoyed this talk and want to hear more about the Insight Exchange Network's DAM Practitioners Summit happening in January 2020 in New York City, along with a discount code, links to register, and more details, visit the show notes at anotherdampodcast.com. Thanks again.